Or we put a bladder and we a jack we, a pneumatic, we fill it with air. You pump air into it. So the thing that lifts the weight is air, oxygen. Air, as light and as invisible as it is, and it's not very real, and it's not a substance, just really spread out protons, neutrons, and electrons, but it can lift a ton. A little bit of air in a very tight space with a fulcrum can actually lift a ton quite easily. So this thing that's supposedly invisible and not real can move this thing that looks so solid and real. The homework for you guys is that number one is to start breathing. Have a relationship with yourself. Start relating to your environment and your bodies and your well-being. So a homework assignment that I would recommend for anyone who lives in America or has vacationed here for more than 30 days, because it's about as long as you can tolerate the suppression, then you finally start holding your breath, is to breathe easier, is to start getting inspired, start getting fulfilled. And so I'm going to give you some examples of what happened and what the breathing exercise is, and then we'll take a break. Then we can have a breather. Sorry. Oh, God. Don't know where that came from. So here's some of the reasons, and it'll fit all of you in different aspects. When you breathe out but you don't breathe in, you're telling the universe you're willing to give but not receive, especially for people with blue or yellows. When yellows get nervous or worried, they say, here's my favorite marbles, do you like me now? You'll try to buy them off. You'll give and give and give, but oh, no, don't give it back. I feel guilty or like I owe you now. And so when you start breathing in, as easily as you breathe out, you start giving the message that you're willing to receive as well as give out. And when you breathe shallow and stay in your head and get hypervigilant, it's really difficult. You wonder why you can't be abundant. You wonder why you're not receiving. You're not letting your body receive. And if you're not abundantly serving you, the universe won't abundantly serve you. It mirrors you. What you see outside of yourself is you. This breathing thing we're going to chat about here is probably the most important thing I'll say today. You can leave after this. If you guys will breathe, the hell with the rest of what Rob says. It's really not important. It's the coolest thing you can do is stay in the moment so you can be fearless. Because when you're in the moment, fear does not exist. It's a projection. Anytime you guys had your worst fears happening, you were too busy in the moment handling it to be afraid. It's only when you backed off and went, holy shit, that was close. Right. So stay in the moment and breathe. And get out of your heads. And one of the things you'll do if you stay in your head a lot is you'll should on yourself a bunch. Oh, if only I'd have done it the way I felt I should have. I knew I should have done this, or I knew I should have done that. But I was in reactivity instead of creativity because I wasn't feeling very fulfilled. I didn't have anything to back it up. I wasn't very inspired to do it. And so it's about breathing. And you'll find that if you, right now, you'll just take like one deep breath, just a... It clears a lot of this heaviness out of you. You feel more present. It gets you out of your head into your body for a moment, but most of you are in lifetime habits. This isn't just something you learned last week. You've been suppressed maybe even before you were born. You know, you had 9 months of your mother's interactions with other people, and for some of you, like me, had 9 months of your mother. That was more than enough 9 months. I didn't want to come out. They had to use forceps to drag me out. I was kicking and screaming. I'm amazed I'm not a conehead. I was holding on so tight. Drag me out. You could have my head, but that's all you could reach. I didn't want to come here, you know. Bunch of boring people. And then I found out that was just me being boring. And so when you start breathing, you will find that this world is actually very cool, that all your fears, all you'll start seeing around you is all the reflections of who you are and how you believe yourself to be. And the things that still remind you of your issues, you get to see in more of a light and inspiring and funny fashion. They don't have to shoot you to get the point across. You don't have to get nuked. You can actually witness it quite effortlessly and easily. So when I did say breathing to you guys a few times, one of the things I noticed is you all took a breath. So I looked around. So that's why I said it a bunch of times. I wanted to make sure everybody's lungs worked. Because if I had somebody whose lungs didn't work, then you have an excuse for not breathing. But so far, I don't see any emphysema advanced to some degree where we're not breathing. So you'll find that when you breathe shallowly, you're also putting your body in survival mode. And that's the biggest thing I see in America is everybody's in survival mode. Even though they're supposed to be free and brave, now the Cold War is long over, but the survival mode with them and their reality is still going on, still raging. They say waging, but I like to say raging, since it seems to be more of a rage these days. The homework is to recognize that when you breathe only using one-third of your lung capacity, you're not breathing for what those lungs were designed for that body. So your tissues and your organism was counting on two-thirds more oxygen than you give it. We're not talking about you have to breathe deep and pass out, just like a complete full breath, as opposed to that shallow upper respiratory thing where you don't even feel your heart. And so what happens is it puts you in a physiological survival mode. And so where do you think that extra energy came from that even got you alive to get here today? It comes from your sexuality. By the way, when I say sexuality, not just sex, we're talking about your sexuality, your full, da-da, here I am, your full presentation of yourself fearlessly. It, this is me, da-da, mammy, sorry, I was back to that guy with the little thing again. And when that energy gets rerouted, it comes from your sexuality, your joy, your creativity. Here's an example of how most of you will see it. You get to go to a dance that night, or to a party, or you're going out to the movies, or you're something you've really been looking forward to. It's not something that you didn't want to do, something you're very excited about. You've been excited all day, might have even got your hair done for it, got some cool clothes, got the tickets in advance, you're ready. And then right when you're getting dressed for it, you're exhausted. Or you create an argument, and you don't get to go. We're back to Freudian psychology again, you sabotage it. And you thought, no, that's that asshole, he didn't want to go, he made me argue with him. No. The funniest one for me is when you like get exhausted. How many of you have noticed like you'll get exhausted right before you're about to do something that you really want to do? And you're going, why am I tired? I even rested up for this. Your body is saying to you, there is no way we're going to let you waste this energy on that frivolous event. You're in survival mode, for Christ's sakes. This is a war. You don't go dancing when it's a war, unless you're at the USO, and you're not going to the USO, so you don't get to go. So I suggest if you want to have fun, go to the USO. Tell your body it's a war, I understand, and I need a break. So that's what the good the USO is still. Most of you guys aren't military anymore, we only have one. So you're the only one that gets to go and have fun and not get tired, Kathy. That army brats, maybe for us that counts too. The homework is to recognize when your body gets tired, don't force yourself to do it. It's to start breathing. All it's saying is if you'll just breathe, and you'll find if you'll just take a few moments and breathe, you'll get your energy back, you'll get right on track. It's just saying to you, you're suffocating yourselves. How are you guys doing? These guys moved all day today. That's amazing. You're like here. And so the homework for breathing, let's see what else is there. Oh, prepared for life. That's another real important one. If I was to have an argument with you guys and I want to scare you, or you'll take a breath and pump up your solar plexus. Oh yeah, I'm ready for you, Rob. Go ahead and give me your best shot. Yeah. You'll take a breath. Well, if you're breathing shallowly, you're not even in your solar plexus at all. You're not even prepared for life. Everything's a reaction for you. Everything, you're in that reactivity. You're not in creativity. You are constantly feeling unprepared for what's next, and you better get it together. And it's a trick. This breathing, the breathing exercise we're about to talk about, which really is something you guys already do, that's the fun part, is I'm just going to have you pay attention to it. So it's not even work. For you yellows who don't want to be told what to do or don't want one more thing to do, I want you to know you already do it. So that's half the battle. It's about paying attention to your breathing and recognizing that you're not in your bodies, you're not feeling prepared, you're stuck in your head, you're being hypervigilant, you're not being your sexual, sensual, fully presented selves, and you're frustrated with that, you're pissed, and you're enraged. And so the way to get through all of that and present yourselves, start breathing. And I want you to know that as soon as I said breathe to you guys, I watched all of you and made sure everybody did, when I said breathe, you guys did take a breath. So your lungs work fine. All you need is a reminder system. That's all. And you need to see that you're in a life habit of not breathing. For most everybody in America, it's been from the day you were conceived, let alone the day you were born. It's a pretty suppressive place. And especially today's children being born with all these fears of money. Can you imagine being in these bodies where the world's changing so fast and all these terrors? Even if you have the world's coolest parents, you're still getting their day-to-day fears. And so it's suffocating. It's got to even be suffocating for the parent. So they're not even giving you enough oxygen, let alone your own suffocation of yourself. So you probably get one quarter of what you could have got, because they only get half and you get a quarter. So the homework is to recognize you do breathe when you're conditioned to or triggered to. And so you just need a string on the finger technique, something that reminds you to breathe a few times a day. Those that measure things and do statistics say it takes 20 to 40 days to create a new habit. And I found that to be pretty true. So all I would request, if you wish to do this, is to just pay attention for 60 days to your breathing. And not constantly. We don't want to make it a mental process. We just want you like 10 or 20 times a day to take a breath. not should on yourselves, oh, I should have been breathing. In fact, while I've been talking about it, you all stop breathing again. So recognize how easy it is, even though I'm here, I'm saying, breathe, 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 breathe. Just go, huh, what did he say? The homework is to get a reminder system that works for you. I have a favorite one that I believe all of you already do. When I watch people go through doorways, I notice it squeeze them, and they take a breath. It's like rebirthing yourself. I'm going to sound like Barbara Walters here. I think we're all sitting in a womb. And when you go out through that rectangular vagina there, it squeezes you, and you take that breath of life. And even if you're going into a hallway, it's like you're going into a new experience, you're going into a new space. And so take full advantage of that. You're already doing it, you're already using it. All we're asking you to do is just remember a few times. Oh yeah, breathe. Okay, and notice it. And in fact, if somebody ends up coming through this door, or when we take the break, whoever comes in first, watch the people come through the door or from the bathroom down the hallway here. You'll watch them come through the door. Even though I told you this, you'll forget I said it. You'll come in the room and you'll take a breath. And if you guys don't start yawning in a minute, you're not paying attention. Carmen's trying to not yawn, and I can feel her over here going, what? Your bodies are going to be like camels at the oasis, and as soon as somebody talks to you about breathing, if you really do start breathing, your body's going to go, oh good, I'm going to get as much air as I can. So one of the hints is to recognize it, is as you think about it or start paying attention to it, it's going to, thank you Sylvia, it's going to make you start yawning. Because your bodies are going to want more oxygen. So that's your trigger. That'll let you know you're starting to pay attention to it. And so everybody said yawning's rude or lacks manners. I've always noticed a number of things in regards to yawning. It's usually when you're not bored. Usually when you're bored, you're fidgeting. You're not yawning. And often yawning happens when you're in a learning situation, like classrooms. Or when you're like, how many of you find that you yawn a lot when you come out of a movie theater? Was it boring? Didn't you just have fun at that adventure movie and all that? Oh, it was the stuffy air and a bunch of people. I listen to people always make these excuses. You have been taught that in order to pay attention, and here's your 1.5 hours, you better fucking pay attention. You just spent $7 plus the $50 you spent for the popcorn. You better pay attention. This just cost you 6 years' wages to go to this movie. You pay attention to it. Live it. And so I watch in movie theaters. I walk up to the front a lot and then walk up the center aisle, and I'm watching everybody hold their breath. It just like breathe, goddammit. So everybody's so holding their, and they come out wondering why they're yawning. Your job is to pay special attention to suffocating situations, or when you're afraid. Like when you're afraid, you hold your breath. Like people go, oh my God. Pay attention to all the times where you hold your breath. It's the time where you need to be breathing, not when you should be holding your breath. And let's say you're about to go on stage and give a speech, and you're nervous about it. One of the fun things about that, at least, is you go through an archway or a doorway, and if you use the doorway method, you will instantly, unconsciously trigger yourself into breathing. I promise you this, that if you'll just pay attention to your breathing for 60 days, it will totally change your life. I have yet to see it not change somebody's life who's paid attention to their breathing. Because it really, without having to get smarter, without having to make more money, without having to get in control, which are all these they're not even real things, they're illusions. The real truth of it is you start feeling more fulfilled and inspired. It gives you the opportunity to be more within yourself, more of your beingness. And that way you can start having your peace and harmony, contentment and well-being. And once you have that, nothing else is important. Once you're within yourself and radiant and self-centered and self-contained and inspired and fulfilled, what else is there? Then you get to be your namesakes. You get to be the human beings that you are. So the first aspect of relationship is how you relate to yourselves. And so breathing is one of your personal responsibilities that we talked you out of. Recognize that what you think about me or what I think about you or what you think about the others is none of our business or none of your business. It's simply a reflection of you, and we'll address that a little bit afterwards. So we'll start getting into the real intricacies of relationship other than these generics. And it takes a lot of energy to stay conscious and pay attention. You've all been told to stay asleep your whole life. You know, that Cinderella we talked about, 99 of the 100 pages really does suck in every fairy tale I've ever read. And we've all been having our fairy tale lives. We've been having avoidance of this and watch out for the wicked witches. And once you start waking up and get to have your life, there's this whole effort that went into it. And it's exhausting. You're going to find you're tired. You're going to find you're overwhelmed. You're enraged. The biggest thing in America is just how angry everybody is. And if any of you believe you're not angry, you can come give me a chat. I'll show you your buttons real quick. and show you where you're angry. I mean, I won't piss you off. I won't shame you, but I'll tell you what your issues are. And you'll get to say, oh, yeah, those things do make me mad. And you'll find there's all these wonderful triggers. America's this land of the free, home of the brave lie. And it's real important for you all to start being brave enough and fulfilled enough to simply say, I'm afraid of this, or I'm powerful here and I'm weak there, or this, I like this and I don't like that. What are your needs and wants? Who are you? What is your real identity? Not what we said you should be, but who are you? And when you get into relationship with other people, especially intimate relationship, by the way, intimacy means into me you see. So when you get into an intimacy relationship, it exposes all the areas where you refuse to let us see into you. We'll get it. We'll certainly nuke you at the level where you thought you were cool, where you were baffling yourself with your bullshit. We'll expose it. Are you brave enough to recognize that there's nowhere to run? We have met the enemy and it is us. That's the key. So yeah, we can get divorced. I divorced. My three ex-wives all did the same thing. The joke in the family, we're all like really good friends. So when my grandson was born last year, we all got together and we had what kind of grandfather is he going to be? What kind of dad chat? And what kind of wives and stepmoms were you? And we had this cool chat. And we all realized, even though we were all very different, and their ex-husbands and their other husbands are different, my ex-wives are all different, there was the same bottom line kept coming up. And the joke in the family for me was, I thought I divorced that. And here it is, you're doing it again. And what, did you call her and say, what is it that Rob really hates so that you could like do it and so you get even with me? And then she paid you to do it because she never got to finish that business. And I thought maybe there was this little conspiracy going on, because the bottom line was, no matter how different all three of them were, the same thing showed up. And it's just, and for all of us, it's going to be just one thing. This is something you can consider during the break. It's not what we did to you, it's what we didn't do for you. It's what we didn't do to you. And some of you have worked with me on that. Keith, I think you and I did some stuff, and Sylvia, we did some stuff. Bethy and I did a little bit on it. The bottom line is that big bowl of spaghetti and worms in front of you that looks like so many things to work on, it'll never end. It's just really one big long strand of spaghetti. It does have a beginning and end. And the one thing is what wasn't given to you that you thought was your fault. And it'll work this way. It's very suppressing and it makes you hold your breath. Let's say you have a parent who doesn't love themselves, so they can't love you. And no matter how you dress, no matter how smart you get, or how demure you make yourself, or how beautiful, or how ugly, or how much like a guy, or how much like a girl, and you think, God, I must not have done it right. I'm just not figuring it out. It's all my fault. I'm just not smart enough. Or you'll find that the trick was in your life is what they didn't give to you is because they never had it for themselves. And in America, that's what Madison Avenue takes full advantage of, your belief in the lie that it was about you. And that if only you had bigger tits, and if only you had more hair, and if only you were thinner, or you worked out, or had better abs, and I can share this with you, even though I do have hair, for the most part I don't match most of the rest of the other stuff. I'm an opinionated, self-centered prima donna who weighs 270 pounds, so and I refuse to work out. My idea of working out is bending my elbow and sticking a grape in my mouth. That's enough exercise for me. Thank you very much. And all the people that are in my life and all my friends totally love me, and I never get a chat. In fact, most of them don't even recognize how much I weigh until I've told them. They go, yeah, you are kind of big, but I didn't notice that till you said it. You know, if it's your issue, it'll come at you. So in this world of relationship, your job is to just be the best you can be and love it and get over judging it. And then whatever you thought you got over, you'll get a pop quiz on. When you finish that chapter and you think you're cool, that's what therapists are for, to help us with the pop quizzes. Wow, I really thought I was cool here. That bitch, she just doesn't appreciate, she's spending all my money or whatever. Or she expects me to just marry her. After all, I've only been dating her 10 years. I don't understand why she expects me to marry her. Yeah. The homework here is just to be fully committed to the moment. That's all you can offer. And to be brave enough to be there, and brave enough to be the best you can be, even if you know you're a fuck up, even if you know you don't know who you are. I have yet to meet a person who really knows who they are. I know a bunch of people, and most of the people I meet who think they know who they are. And I meet some pretty cool people there. And I look in the mirror and I go, who are you? Because I'm still in reaction to a third of the things I was told I should be. I was going to die. If I didn't react to those things, I'd have gotten killed. So I know that that's my homework. And so the fun part for me is I'm not afraid to say it. And so it comes at me effortlessly and easily, like little sprinkles. Now, if I went around saying, oh, I'm cool and everything's perfect and I've figured it all out, I'll tell you, the Plymouth Rock will land on you. For those of you who've had that privilege and experience, you'll know just what we're talking about. The homework is to let relationship get you clear on who you are so that you can own it. It's not about fixing yourself. You're not broken. It's just be inspired with yourself, be fulfilled with yourself. Look yourself in the mirror and love yourself. Don't let all this bullshit about how tall or short or black or white or rich or poor or thin or all this stuff. It's just the trick of the year. And it's about being abundant with yourselves and loving yourself. And when you start being inspired with yourself and you start breathing and getting in your body and telling your truth, you will get pop quizzes. And let's say you're in a relationship where your fear is commitment. And you're with the person who really wants you to commit. And you might get brave enough to say, well, my issue is commitment, but until we really get confident with it, we'll have that person will still be relentless with us. Well, now that we know it, what are you going to do? Are you going to commit to this or not? You're going to make it this. Now that you know it's about commitment, I want you to commit. The homework is, why is it we're not committing? What is it? What? In fact, for everybody, the only thing you can commit to is the moment. My suggestion is you say, I can commit to here and now. It's like saying, you're so inconsistent. Well, that's interesting. You just told me I was inconsistent on a consistent basis. Well, it seems to me then that I'm consistently inconsistent. Therefore, I'm consistent. You can count on me not being there when you need me. Count on it. And if I'm not there, and you know you can't count on me being there, you sabotaged yourself. It's a setup. You can be as mad as me as you want, but you have no right to be mad at me because you've just told me how inconsistent I am. So I now know that you know, and so anytime you're angry with me, I can't take it personal. You really are just trying to emotionally blackmail me or manipulate me, or you're lying to yourself. Once you start telling your truth and you share it honestly with the person, from that point on, it's their responsibility whether they've listened or not or how they react to it. And that's in turn turning around when they've shared with us who they are. We can go ahead and try to blackmail them and manipulate them, but that's all it is. It's really not healthy. It really isn't that we are loving or accepting them for who they are. We're trying to get them to medicate us. The thing is to be honest about it. I want you to medicate me. You'll find if you'll be honest about it, you'll get to move right to the next layer. Well, what is it that I didn't get? What was the one thing that I didn't get? Why are you all doing this to me? Why do you all abandon me? Or why is it you all don't love me? Why is it I'm just so, I really think I'm a good person. Why is it nobody loves me? You get to see why it is you're not loving yourself. And you'll chase that carrot forever. The metaphor works this way. Keith, if you really love me, you'd give me $1 million. Well, Rob, probably not, but even let's say, yes, if I did love you, I'd give you $1 million. I do love you, and I don't have $1 million. I can't give it to you. Oh, well, Keith, you don't love me. I knew you didn't love me. He doesn't love me. He didn't give me $1 million. It's not in his bank account to give to me. So your parents, who may or may not have loved you the way you wanted to, or given you the space the way you wanted it to, or showed their love to you the way you wanted them to, they didn't have it in their bank account. Tan parents say they love you by telling you what you should do and laying out the rules and regulations. Green parents, who think children are actually an inconvenience, by the way, you need to get used to that if any of you are greens and have children or are the children of a green parent. They, if they're really being honest with you, the one benefit I had with my mom, who's a green and violet, is she said, you guys are really an inconvenience. And that was a truth. When I heard it, it was an absolute truth. And so I never held her to a higher level than what she could. I knew my mom loved me, but she couldn't demonstrate love beyond thinking of us as inconveniences, because that really is a truth for green. Green has a really hard, they have places to go, people to see, and things to do. And so because she was honest with me about it, great, I just hung out with my nannies, and yet I saw my mom for who she was. So we get to have this cool relationship, even though she's queen bitch on planet Earth. I'll say that in this fashion, but she never takes affront to it. We don't do knock-down drag-outs. She goes, yeah, I'm a bitch. You are a bitch, and I'm an asshole. So what? We love each other very much. That's the recognition. So the homework is, she didn't have to be perfect. She's perfectly herself. You just have to know who you are and admit it. And so we can have the best possible relationship within our capability. She is not a blue. She is not going to be true blue. She isn't going to be saccharine and sweet and loving. That's why I married three of them. Figured I'd marry three and I can get my dosage of it. So it wasn't her job. So you guys, watch out. The lie for me was, in my life, was that it wasn't safe here. Because my mom tried to kill all of us. That I wished you were dead and beat the bejeebies out of us every day. And her lie was, I'll share this with you and we'll go to the break. She grew up in Rome, Italy, in this very powerful, wealthy family, and then the war came. She was a young lady. Her mom died of tetanus. Her dad was not available, and so she was on her own. And she really, and then the Nazis took 100 of the townspeople, 50 of which were her relatives, lined them up at the catacombs across from her house and shot them all dead. And the ones that didn't die, they left moaning there. And green and violets, they want to take charge. They want to get in there and do something. And she makes Leona Helmsley look like a wimp. And she's this little pistol. And she just wanted to run in there and save them. And the Nazis put a Luger up to her head and said, if you take one more step, we'll kill you. So she couldn't go and help these people. And they're moaning and groaning. And this woman, she, one of her things, she's a nurse. She's a dietitian. She's medically oriented. So she wants to go and run and help these people. And she can't. And so people you love get hurt where you can't do anything about it. And you hate that so much that you'd rather have them be dead instantly than see them in pain. And so that's my mom doesn't, she finally learned that. I'd say it to her a million times. She finally got it. So now she says to me, yeah, I really can't, I'd rather see people either be dead or alive, but I can't handle the middle ground. So anytime you guys look like you're going to be in the middle ground, I wish you were dead. So little kids, what little kids always happy go, usually we got some wound somewhere, which to a person who has that issue brings up all their terror of death. And so that's, we get the shit beat out of us when we get hurt. And you go, why? I'm already hurt. For years she was really mad at me. She said she broke her hand hitting me really hard once when I was 5 or 6. And she goes, I'm still mad at you for making me so mad that I broke my hand. You made me break my hand. You know, so that's how that's sometimes how our parents have their reality. And so fortunately I had enough assistance to say, oh mom, you know, it's really nice of you to think that, but you have to be responsible for your stuff. And I just reminded you of your issues. Didn't have to get mad at her. I didn't have to like, oh, my mom loves me. She loves me too much. She worries about me and my pain, so she kills me. And she loves me so much she wants to kill me so she doesn't feel my pain. And once you know the truth of it, and as sick and crazy as it is, the truth sets you free. Whenever my mom goes nuclear, I can't take it personal. And I simply understand now what triggers her. So I just don't demonstrate my wounds to her. Until we're in a condition where I can say, Mom, I have these wounds and here, and be ready, you know, this is going to put you in regression. And we'll talk about designated adult because it's a technique I use on her that works really well, and I've talked with some of you about it. I think did you get to hear it off of Keith's tape? We'll talk about it. And so let's take a few minutes break and we'll show you a couple techniques for those of you who want practical stuff that you can take into any relationship. And there's some munchies over there. And we'll take like 10 minutes. Are we rolling again? Yes. So right before I started the tape, I asked you how many of you had a hot water heater in your house, and then I asked you how many of you guys had a water heater, because really you don't need to heat hot water. We take a lot of things for granted here. We have been force-fed so many terms like that. You'll find I make, because of how I learned about America was through television. I had two Japanese nannies. My first 3 years of my life was actually in Osaka, Japan. So when we moved to my mom's villa in Italy, while my dad traveled around the world, I had two Japanese nannies. My principal language is actually Japanese. My second language is Italian, and my third language is English. So how I learned about English in America was watching television when I was here, bored out of my gourd, because all I spoke was Japanese and Italian. I didn't speak much English yet. And so you'll find me make reference like the two mints in one. I'll throw out little things. Part of it is I watch you to see how much conditioning you guys had. Is if you start laughing at my jokes based on that, I go, oh my God, you guys really did. You saw that commercial too. And you believe that we do have hot water heaters. What is this? What is that, Victoria? Yeah, so it's a glass of water and ice. Anybody disagree with that? Do you know that this is a glass of water? Because ice is water. Or it's a glass of potential ice and potential water. There's so many ways to look at something. The reason I handed out the Define Good cartoon is one of the things we're leading into in relationship is what you think you're seeing is not what you're seeing. What you're defining, your partner may not agree with that definition. It's going to sound redundant, and it's going to sound asinine, and it might sound like you're being facetious. I strongly suggest you start asking for people, even if you've known them for years, to start defining things. Well, that's really nice, honey. What does nice mean, sweetheart? Well, it would really be fun. What does fun mean to you? What is fun? Well, that's a tall person. Well, how's tall is tall? Well, if you're only 5'2", tall could be anything from 5'3 and up. For me, a tall person, I start thinking 6'4 and up. When I came to America, I grew up in a country where 24 hours doesn't exist. You guys take for granted when somebody says 24 hours that it's open 24 hours. I grew up in a country where we take a break in the afternoon. There is nothing is ever open 24 hours. Now it is. We have McDonald's there now. We have things that it's broken that bond, and some people can choose some companies. But when I was a young kid, everything had this siesta thing, this afternoon break. And so when I heard Stephen Wright tell this joke, one of my favorite jokes, it just brings back that confusion I had, because it helped me learn to define things with you guys. Because people would say, well, it's open 24 hours. Which 24 are we talking about? And so Stephen Wright has this great joke. It's 2 in the morning, and I'm starving. And there it was. It said open 24 hours, and there he was inside mopping the floor. So I went up to the door, and I pulled on the door. It was locked. So I yelled inside the crack, hey, it says you're open 24 hours. And he yelled back, hey, not in a row. Watch out what you guys take for granted. In the world of relationship, it's really important that you know it's just about you. Don't be attached to our definitions. Don't be in reaction to us. Because we might be totally operating on a different value system, a different belief system. A story that happened to me when I was doing my graduate work at UCLA, I had this amazing teacher called a paranoid schizophrenic. Is the best teacher I ever had. They come in different forms, folks. And if you had a judgment about them having to be in robes and talking with these and thous and actually have done their spirit quest and talks to angels and all that, I would have been in deep shit. He doesn't do any of that stuff. But he was the best teacher I ever had. And I had the privilege of getting to be his therapist as a student. So every week he would come in and he'd have a different paradox for me. And my favorite one, which was life-changing for me, is he came in one day and he put a glass of water filled to the middle in front of me. He says, okay, Doc, what do you see? I said, well, you son of a bitch, you do something to me every week, and no matter how I answer, you're going to twist it around. He goes, that's right, so I'm the crazy one, I'm going to do that. And I said, well, I don't think it's half full. And he goes, well, how do we word it? I'm sorry. I go, well, okay, you're making me make a decision here, so I'm going to say it's half full. And he goes, thanks for playing the game, Doc. Well, I don't think it's half empty. He goes, well, at least you got that one right. He says, all of you out-sane people, you're so concerned with content. Like, the reason I asked Victoria what she saw, there's a lot of different things to see here, an unlimited amount of things to see here, but you guys have been taught a contained, functional fixedness is one of those clinical terms they have for us. You know, we think a glass is supposed to have things put in it that it could be a party hat with a string. I mean, I feel like some comedian going through this whole routine with it. There's so many options, and when I was with him, he's going, well, all of you out-sane people, you're so concerned with content. Is it full? Is it empty? Is it water? Is it sweet? Is it salty? Is it black? Is it white? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it poisonous? Is it healthy? You're so exhausting. Says, who gives a shit what it is? In fact, us insane people, we're just containers. We just let everything flow through us. We really don't care what it is. And so when I look at that, among the many options, one of them is that glass, that container is twice as large as it needs to be. It isn't half full or half empty. It's just like, it's, you know, like why Rob's comments were all content oriented. That's how I see it. When I held it up, you guys had to define it as a container with contents in it. Why can it not be ice and water surrounded, bound by, blocked by, impeded with a container or plastic proton, neutron, and electron configuration? Why is it that the container has to hold that stuff? Why is it that this fluid gets to have the benefit of that? So what he said to me is, he goes, well, us insane people, since we just let things flow through us, I might pretend I'm Napoleon for a while, and as soon as you say, write down, oh, he has a Napoleon complex, and I'll turn into Josephine just to piss you off. So, and it will drive you nuts, because you are trying to define me. You are trying to limit me. And in your outsanity and your terror of insanity, you want to be able to define me. You want to know who I am so you know how to relate to me. And he led me to an insight. Even though he didn't say it, I knew he was saying it to me. It's telepathically, I got this whole thing. And he was telling me he was God. You know, and that's one of the things we were treating him for, is he pretty much said he was God. And then this little voice in my head said, well, G-O-D stands for God over defining. And don't we say God is everything and God is undefined? And so even though he didn't say it out loud, God really talked. He did talk to me. God did talk to me. Oh my God. And he taught me that you just get over defining to be God. And so to get back into relationship with your true self, you need to recognize why it is you think you need to define everything and where you fit in time and space. And is this really what you think it is? And is he really crazy? And he said, look, who's the crazy one? You guys feed me, house me, clothe me. I get to play with people like you. I get to work with my brain, and I get to get stimulated with you geniuses. He goes, this is heaven on earth for me. Who's really the nut here, me or you? He is in heaven. And he was just in his perfect spot to do his teaching stuff. So what I want to suggest is that everything you think is real isn't, and everything you think isn't real probably is. And then again, the minute you think it's real, it won't be. How many of you believe 2 + 2 = 4? How many of you don't believe that? And tell me why it is you don't believe that. It's a setup, huh? There's a lot of different ways to look at it, and we're going to work on time and space concepts. If I have 2 birds here, and I have 2 birds here, how many birds do we have? Okay. If I take these 2 birds here, and I put the other 2 way over there, how many do we have? Now, what if I happen to have one hidden behind there you didn't see? Because you didn't see it, was it still 4 birds, or now because you see it and know it's there, is it not 5? And you're saying that if it's 30 feet apart, it's still 4, at what distance or at what point does it now just become 2 and 2? 30 feet, 40 feet, 60 feet? In fact, if there is no such distance thing, then 2 and 2 is everything, because we're totally combined with everything if distance really isn't relevant. Is that making sense to you guys? There's no answer to this. It's just to help you guys just let go of some of the limiting belief systems. My third wife, I pick on Brooke a lot because she enjoys it, for starters, because her brain enjoys it. So Brooke, here we go again. When I was married to Brooke, who's a vegan vegetarian, vegan vegetarians are very strict. They don't use any animal products of any kind, no leather, no animal byproducts. It makes for a pretty limiting life in this very sound asleep America, because everything's an animal product. Hell, I'm an animal product. So what'd you marry me for? That was one of my first comments to her. Am I not an animal product? What they call the male animal. Oh my God, you're in trouble. And you're using me. So maybe we should get divorced. So she would teach everybody about her vegan vegetarianism, and then after about 6 months of it, I raised my hand and I said, Brooke, I do not believe you're a vegan vegetarian, because I've heard you say more than 12 times to people that the reason you do it is that meat stays in your body. Once you've eaten red meat, it stays in your body for 15 to 30 years. Now, how many years have you been a vegan vegetarian? Well, I've been one for 7 years. Now, wait a minute. 7 from, let's say, 12 is 5. You have 5 more years before you can be, it's still in your body. How do you define yourself? Are you a vegan vegetarian based on your input or what's in your body or on your output? Because by my concept, since it's in your body and it's still it's still something your body's taking advantage of, are you not a vegan vegetarian? You cannot be one for at least 15 years from the moment you decide you might. You have to be an apprentice vegan vegetarian. You don't get to be one until you finally pooped it out. Right? Well, I can't help it. I'm a crude person. That's my brain instantly went, you're a liar. You're lying to yourself. You really believe you're this one. Yes, you live a life of a vegan vegetarian, but you are not one yet. You are an apprentice. You're acting as if you're in AA. You're acting as if, and one day you will be sober. One day you will be a vegan, but you are not yet. And then I said, besides that, those cereal boxes you have in there, what do you think the glue's made of that holds them together? Nowadays, they're starting to make more glues out of tapioca, or out of cornstarch, but at the time they were using animal products. Even the health food stores were using animal products. Now, most of like Barbara's cereals and stuff, they're all tapioca-based glues. And I said, you're breaking your own rules. You have dead horses on your shelf that are containing your foods that are so special. It kind of takes the edge off of it, doesn't it, that dead horses are containing your food that you think is so special? It's a trick, Brooke. The trick is, watch out, how many of you drink coffee? You guys heard this last time. How many drink decaffeinated coffee? You ever drink coffee, Bill? Decaffeinated, anybody? Decaffeinated coffee is a trick in this fashion. If you read the can, it says 97% caffeine free. Caffeinated coffee is 94% caffeine free. Okay? If it was 100% caffeine, it would kill you based on most of your guys' belief systems. So it isn't 100% caffeine you're drinking, it's coffee with some caffeine in it. So 6%, as a matter of fact. When you actually ingest decaffeinated coffee, you're taking in coffee that has half the caffeine. The difference between 94 and 100, half is 97. 97% caffeine free is only half the caffeine. So if you drink more than one cup, you are back to might as well just have had one cup of good coffee. I giggle when I see people, well, I can drink 10 cups of this. And how can you do that? What is your brain actually believes it so much that you drink 10 cups of decaffeinated coffee and you're not wired. That's how powerful your brain is. It's right in Consumer Reports. All you have to do is read it. It's about 3 years ago. It's pretty easy to research. Just look up caffeine and Consumer Reports at the library and you can read the article. It's hilarious. And then a new thing came out last year, and I've just been giggling about it the whole year. It's still in the store. I saw it in the store today. There's coffee that Maxwell House and Folgers sells for a little bit more than the decaffeinated coffee, and it says half the caffeine on it, and they charge you more for that. I would be insulted to just because they said it's the same. 97% caffeine and half the caffeine are the same thing. And they're charging people for that and getting away with it because we don't question things. We don't ask for the definition of it. We just assume 97% free means that they took out that much. So watch for the lies. Watch for the tricks. Watch 24 hours isn't necessarily in a row all around the world. It wasn't where I grew up. And when you guys say 24 hours, I go, which ones? You know, it all depends on where they're coming from. So if you do a relationship with me and you didn't know I grew up in Europe and you say, well, it's open 24 hours, I'm going to sound like I'm insulting you or sound real stupid by saying, well, which 24 are you talking about? And you, well, that's stupid, but 24 hours in a row. And I'm going to make you define it. And you're going to say, well, quit pestering me, or you're just challenging me. I don't know what you're talking about. It took me a couple of times to get that you guys have it in a row here, that you really believe that. It's a trick. I can quote some Gallagher things. Why do they call them apartments when they're all together? Why do you guys have locks on the 7-Elevens when they're open 24 hours? Why do you need to lock that place? Do you ever see one locked? Why did they go through the expense of buying? That's got to be expensive. It's got to be on a corporate level to buy those locks for $100 million. It's got to be expensive. And what? As soon as you break in and shoot, the bullets probably break the glass in a break-in, so they lock the door, but you walk through the hole in the window. So it's like the locks are pretty useless. And we talk about, what does he talk about? The Department of the Interior is in charge of everything that's outdoors in America. The Department of Defense has first strike capability. Should call it the Department of Offense and get over it. And it's right under our nose all the time. And we never question it. And so, and I'm talking about in a broader scale, because you guys are a subset of that broader scale. When you're in relationship with each other, do not take anything for granted. You'll be surprised how we all have different definitions or different brainwashings. It's real imperative to pay attention to that. What is the content you believe you're measuring? I would say as a therapist, it was the number one thing that I worked with, is that people really were really in a similar direction. They really were looking to get things handled, and they never took the time to define the simple things. They thought, if we define the big things, what do we feel about abortion, and what do we feel about bank accounts and separate accounts? But not, what do we feel about 24 hours, and what do we feel about decaffeinated coffee? You'll be surprised, it's the little things that mess with you. It's not the big things. And the little things, they just seem so frivolous and simple. You actually really need to stay conscious, and it's a full-time duty job to stay paying attention. Part of your job is to pay attention so that you can define yourselves out and separate yourselves out so you can finally let go of the definition. The way you guys get to be whole is by acting separate. And we're trying to act in America, United States. Heaven help you. You're part of the lie. You're in the United States. The way you guys became whole was through a process called mitosis. The way you became whole beings is you got inseminated, you divided into two, you divided into four, and you continued on this process of dividing into millions and millions of cells, and therefore became whole through a process of definition and separation and defining of those parts. The way you're all going to become whole and recognize yourselves as a unit again, the way the United States gets to demonstrate wholeness is through separation. Your job is not to be one like-minded thinking thing. You already are. Your job is to know that if you all acted like red blood cells and you were part of a body, you would just spill as blood on the ground. Who's going to be the muscle? Who's going to be the vessels? Who's going to be the ligament? Who's going to be the brain cells? Who's going to be the eosinophils? Who's going to be the bacteria? We all have different parts. So maybe the bacteria are the bad guys. And so maybe the white blood cells are, let's love the white blood cells, only in America. If you look under a microscope, they're not always white. Basophils are, by the time you stain them, they're purple. But because they're the good guys and they come in and save the bacteria, we call them white blood cells. I just love that. And so I just giggled inside. I'm going, who named these? What white guy decided these were white blood cells? You know, if we just had one of the black scientists name it, you know, there would have been black blood cells. Watch out, it's just the simplest things sneak on you. These white-hatted guys in the Westerns are the white blood cells. And we're talking real simple. And once you recognize your truth and you really see where you've lied to yourself and what your definitions are, that's what starts giving you your separation and your autonomy and your identity, so then you can step forward bravely as part of this mechanism and say, this is my job. This is what I'm here to do fearlessly, and I'm not here to do your job or anyone else's, and you guys don't get to judge me. You can, but I don't give a shit. It's like another Gallagher thing. I once got an F on a test that asked for my opinion. Pretty ludicrous, huh? When you speak your truth, is it not simply your opinion? You should break into laughter when somebody grades your test when it's an opinion. You should equally break into laughter when you offer an opinion and somebody says, uh-uh. You say, yeah, it's just an opinion. You don't get to grade it. Just laugh. Roll on. They'll go, what are you laughing about? Oh, you'll figure it out someday. You're not here to educate them. You're here to be God, and you're here to get defined so you can get over definition. Watch where you give your power away. M-O-M. D-A-D, H-I-M, H-E-R, Y-O-U, C-I-A, V-I-P, C-E-O, Jesus H. Christ. We had to name him Herbert to give him some power. It's the three-letter words that are here, M-O-M and D-A-D especially. R-O-B, watch out for me, I'm R-O-B-G-O-D. I'd double it up on you. Rob, God, it's a big trouble. So the homework is to recognize where you give your power away, and that God's job is, you really are all God, and this is not a religious chat, you just are. And the way you really own it and claim it is you recognize what your strengths and weaknesses are, and you're using relationship for it. These are mirrors in your face showing you who you are, what you believe, what you don't believe. It's not their fault. If you don't like what you see, do your homework. If you don't like what you see, own who you are and be honest about it. It's really not about they beat me up, they abandoned me, they stole my money. I must have abandoned my identity somewhere. I must be beating myself up somewhere. It translates into other layers. If any of you have an issue about recycling, what is it in you that you're wasting? It's not about the trees are going to go bye-bye. And this. I loved being in Hawaii when I was there. I watched lava, the ultimate digestive system of Mother Earth, eat plastic like it. Well, I watched it eat cars. A car will take 3,000 years to break down. Not if Mother Earth has her way. She digested a car. I watched her digest a car in 2 seconds flat. I watched that car disappear forever. And you could stand over the lava and still feel the heat. How dare we, as ants on a dog's back or fleas on a dog's back, think that we're doing this stuff? That's our arrogance. Our job is simply to just be part of this big picture and to recognize that all this control and all this stuff doesn't serve you. It just makes you frightened. It makes you stiffish in your relationships. It makes you feel like you have to force an identity, and then you're lonely. And then you won't let us see into you because you don't want us to challenge that definition. So then we